From the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs at Brown University, this is Trending Globally. I'm Dan Richards. On September 13th, a young Iranian woman named Mahsa Amini was detained by the country's morality police for improperly wearing her hijab. 3 days later, she was dead. Authorities claimed it was the result of a heart attack, but images of her in the hospital, bruised and bloodied, suggest otherwise. The images, along with the government's cover-up surrounding the details of her death, have sparked a protest movement in Iran unlike any the country has seen. Phrases like death to the Islamic Republic and death to the dictator are being chanted around the country, on city streets, in university campuses, and even in schools for young girls. But as anthropologist and Watson Professor of International Relations Nadja Al-Ali describes, it's not just the range of participants that make these protests unique. It's the way that women's rights and gender equality have been put at the front and center of the movement.
Not only the mandatory veiling, but more broadly than that, the issue of women's rights, the control of women's bodies, it's not a side issue anymore.
On this bonus episode of Trending Globally, I talked with Nadja about the protests and the unique role gender is playing in them. What we're seeing is and always has been about more than just what women wear. It's also part of a much longer history of political resistance in Iran that many of us, especially in the West, would do well to better understand. I started by asking her to describe the underlying issues that make this moment in Iran so ripe for protest. Here's Nadja.
Well, there are lots of different reasons, as you might imagine. So one reason, and I'm actually surprised people don't talk about it, is that Iran has been under economic sanctions for quite a while now and is suffering from a severe economic crisis. But maybe more importantly, over the last year or two, we've had lots of women who had actually been arrested by the so-called morality police because current President Ibrahim Raisi is taking a hardline approach. And so there has been a series of small protests and, people just within Iran, trying to figure out, what is happening, how far can we go? And also, of course, Iran has experienced a series of protests. Very few people know that in 2019, people were protesting on the street. Hundreds of people were actually killed. At the time, they were protesting against corruption, also against economic condition, oppression. But because the regime is heavily invested in the internet infrastructure, it is able to shut down the internet. So very few images at the time got out of Iran. 2019. But, really, I think also if you go even further back in history, ever since the Islamic Revolution of 1979, women have been protesting against not only the mandatory veiling, but also other aspects of control and authoritarianism.
So how do you view then what's happening right now in terms of how much is it a sort of like part of this lineage of protests, mm-hmm. but also what seems different about it, or does anything seem different about it to you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think what is different is that the issue of women's rights, the control of women's bodies, not only the mandatory veiling, but more broadly than that, has become the center of protest. It's not a side issue anymore. So in the past, like when we think about the green protest during the election or even the 2019 protest, yes, women were out on the street and they might have protested against the veil, but it wasn't so central. Now you actually have men in solidarity with women. But also what has become obvious in Iran, and not just actually in Iran, across the region, is that the struggle for gender-based equality, for women's rights, that has actually become central to the struggle against authoritarianism. And I mean, we've seen that in Iraq, we've seen that in Lebanon, we are seeing this in Turkey as well. In Iran, there is a similar trend evident.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think because, unlike I think many political scientists who, you know, I think historically have been gender blind and thought, you know, that gender issues are a side issue. When you look at political regimes globally, you can tell a lot about the kind of the nature of the regime when you look at their specific gender politics. You know, we see the same happening in the US. I mean, discussions around reproductive rights, abortion, discussions around LGBTQI rights, women's sexuality and so on, are very much linked to wider political orientations. And this is because communities define themselves very much through the idea of, you know, women's bodies. You know, a woman is perceived to be the biological reproducer of a community, and then she becomes a symbolic producer of a community as well. Can I go back to your question of what is different?
Yeah.
The other thing that I feel people haven't really addressed a lot is the fact that Mahsa Amini was Kurdish. She wasn't, so many of the women that have been arrested historically were often middle class or upper middle class, urban women, Iranian, you know, often from Tehran, who were really pushing it with respect to dress code, you know, were dressed in a kind of very fashionable way. But Mahsa Amini came from a small town in the west of Iran, a predominantly Kurdish region. She and her family were visiting relatives in Tehran. She was people refer to, you know, she was just an ordinary girl, you know, who wasn't even trying to make a statement, right? And so this has, I think, galvanized even more people that, you know, people coming together in solidarity and protesting the death of not an urban middle class person, but, you know, a woman from a community that's actually marginalized in Iran. I think that's significant as well.
Yeah, so it's both not predominantly led by men and or, you know, middle class professional men from the center of the country.
Yes, yes. Although, you know, the different protests, I mean, I think in 2019, we also saw a broader class base. But, you know, when it comes to the issue of women's rights, it has often been the sort of urban middle class women who were at the forefront. But this is clearly much more broad based. And women are leading the protest, but they're joined by men as well. And it's across Iran, you know, different regions, different cities, big urban areas, smaller cities as well.
Going back to some of the underlying causes of this current protest or uprising, do you think that global movements in the last few years, especially geared towards women and LGBTQ rights, have had an effect on people and on women in Iran to bring issues of gender to the front and center?
You know, it's interesting that you ask this question because I saw, I think it was today or yesterday in The Guardian, a letter to the editor by a woman based in the US who said, well, what is often missing in the discussion is that women in Iran are very much influenced by the US feminist movement and they're aware of that. And I have such a strong reaction against that because, you know, Iranian women, long before, women in the US or elsewhere in the West, have been mobilizing around gender-based issues. And so, yes, it is true that there is something global, transnational happening in terms of gender-based issues becoming more central to wider claims to challenge political regimes. But I don't think that we can say that Iranian women needed any kind of inspiration from the outside, certainly not from Western context.
Yeah, and I don't mean to say that that's where it came from or it was required. I think it's just trying to figure out what caused this movement to take this shape now, as opposed to 10, 20, like, as you said, there's a centering of gender issues that there maybe hadn't been before.
Well, I mean, I think that the Iranian women's movement, which has existed for a long time, always centered women's issues. But what is different is that a wider public is more susceptible to actually centering that as well. And I think that has something to do with an increased awareness globally how especially authoritarian, militaristic, right-wing political regimes are instrumentalizing women, gender, and also, of course, trying to reinforce heteronormativity. I mean, it's all linked. And I think there is an increasing awareness globally.
And the leaders in Iran have thus far shown no signs of sort of capitulating to these protests. And in fact, the cracking down seems just incredibly severe, at least based on what we're seeing from the internet. I wonder how you think that strategy will play out.
You know, if I can go back, I mean, I think very few people realize that I think one major reason why the protest started is not only because a young woman died clearly as a consequence of being beaten up by the police, but the subsequent attempt at cover-up once the images of Mahsa Amini start to circulate. Instead of coming out and saying, okay, we're going to investigate it, you know, something happened, we don't know, we'll look at it, immediately they denied that there was any violence exerted by the hand of the police. And not only that, they actually published a heavily edited video of Mahsa Amini, how she was detained in the first instance, how she then had an interrogation, and then the next thing you see her lying on the floor. And I think that really sparked the anger. Now, you know, we have, I know that President Ibrahim Raisi now has come out and said, you know, we're sorry what has happened. I know we're going to investigate, but I think that's a bit too late. Meanwhile, you have Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who is saying, well, you know, this is all Western infiltration. You know, this is kind of one of the common lines. Now you ask me, how is this all going to play out? I think it can go into all kinds of different directions. I mean, historically, we've seen that the brutal crackdown by the Iranian regime, and of course, other regimes globally in these situations, could lead to a situation where the protests would halt because so many people get detained, injured, and even die, as we've already seen, right? But then on the other hand, it could also be that the regime is unable to actually crack down totally on the protest, that the protest could be lasting and widespread, and that the regime will be unable to actually contain them and would then have to make concessions, right? And then again, we have different scenarios because I don't think that at this point protesters would be satisfied just with an easing of the implementing of the mandatory veiling. Now, the demands that we hear from protesters are broader than that. So I have to say, you know, I'm not good at fortune telling, but I, from everything that I know, both in terms of the history of Iran, but also other protest movements in the region, I feel it could go into any of these directions.
You know, as you're describing it, I can't help but think of protest movements that have shook so many countries around the world, including the U.S. over the last few years, particularly the precipitating event of this sort of footage of violence to a marginalized person that's sort of irrefutable. How do you think about it in terms of other protest movements around the world?
Well, I think there are parallels. I mean, you know, you had in Tunisia, you had the images of food seller who was attacked by police that sort of sparked the protest. In Egypt, you also had images of a young man who was killed by the police that sparked off protest. I mean, it's never just the reason, but it's a spark, right? And always there are underlying issues, economic issues, issues around political repression. And yes, increasingly also the awareness and the pushback in terms of gender-based inequalities and rights. But then, you know, I'm thinking about sort of the idea of revolutions. And I know that revolutions, you know, do not happen from one day to the next, but they happen over a long period of time. And although I think regimes might manage to suppress and crack down violently on protest for a certain period of time, I just don't think that sort of the underlying dissent and resistance can be totally squashed. The other thing I think that becomes so apparent for me now is everywhere in the world, we see that societies are polarized. And we see on the one hand, you know, various forms of right-wing movements, while you also have progressive political ideas and movements that are really centering the idea of gender-based rights and LGBTQ rights and, you know, are working also against racism and the discrimination of any marginalized groups. We see this everywhere, right? And we know that in Iran, there will be people who are supportive of the regime. As we know, there are people in the US who were supportive of Trump or are supportive of racism, right? So we see these polarizations everywhere in the world.
Is there a leader or some sort of larger organization behind these protests?
As far as I know, and everything that I've heard from Iranian women activists and also what I've read, currently there is no leader. And I think that's one of the things that the current regime, the Iranian regime, is really fearing. Right now it's organic, you know, people from different walks of life protesting against the killing, but then having a different set of demands and having different experiences as well based on the different class backgrounds, ethnicity, whether they're women and men, whether they live in a big city or a small city. But the moment this becomes more formalized or structured, the moment you have a leadership emerging, I think that will feel even more threatening to the regime. Now, when I look at other protest movements, like in Egypt, for example, also Sudan to some extent, I mean, that's one of the problems, that it's difficult for such a leadership to emerge. Because partly it's contrary to what is happening. I mean, people are reacting to these more hierarchical, authoritarian political structures. And it's more of a sort of really, I mean, democratic in the true sense of people just coming together, galvanizing around common causes. And maybe if you start to dig a bit deeper, maybe also having actually different views on certain issues, you know, but they come together on some basics. So right now, no, I'm not sure whether it might emerge in the future.
Despite the efforts by authorities in Iran to cut off access and communication with the rest of the world, so many really incredible images and pieces of footage and moments have been captured of these protests. And I wonder if there are just any that stand out to you that you think people should check out if they haven't seen.
Yeah. So first thing that comes to mind are seeing images of women taking off the hijab and cutting their hair. And the cutting of hair is symbolic of mourning. And so that's what's happening. And women throwing their veils into bonfires. I mean, these are very powerful images. But the other thing I've just been made aware of, there is a singer-songwriter, Iranian, by the name of Shervin Hajipour. And he wrote a song based on social media excerpts of people stating why they're joining the protest. So, you know, I joined the protest because I want freedom for women, or because kissing on the street is not allowed. And he wrote this beautiful song, which is called Beraj, which means for or because of. And that song has become an anthem of the revolution. And it's being played during the protests. It's being played in the diaspora. I've seen images of school girls They're standing in front of the blackboard where the lyrics of the songs are written, and they're singing it. And, you know, you see their hair, they're taking off the hijab. It has been circulating.
Well, Nadia Al-Ali, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
This episode was produced by me, Dan Richards. Our theme music is by Henry Bloomfield. Additional music by the Blue Dot Sessions. We'll put a link to this song in the show notes. If you like Trending Globally, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It really helps others find us. And if you haven't subscribed to the show already, please do that too. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for guests or topics, shoot us an email at trendingglobally@brown.edu. Again, that's all one word, trendingglobally@brown.edu. We'll be back next week with another episode of Trending Globally. Thanks.